This week on Out of the Air, our entire show features an interview with the multi-Grammy Award nominee and visionary New Age composer David Arkenstone, discussing his remarkable musical journey. Plus, he'll be sharing music from the world premiere of his new album released July 1st, Quest for the Runestone. Our spotlight's on the summer events at the Memorial Opera House.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry, Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther, Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight from the Memorial Opera House. She's the events coordinator there and is going to tell us all about what's coming up for the summertime there and also about the renovations going on. Adrienne Bansimer, thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
First, I guess we'll touch on the renovation process and how that's going and everything. Tell us about what's going on with the process.
So we are on task and on target with everything so far. No major hiccups, thank goodness. But we are getting all new seating, all new carpeting, new paint, new everything. So everything's going to have a very fresh, clean look. New seating, the seats are going to be so much more comfortable. And I'm super excited about those. Me being a short person, I like having comfy seats. But yeah, so and when you walk in, it'll still all still have that nostalgic feel back to what we used to have. It's just going to be updated with a more fresh look, I guess is the easiest way to put it. And some opening up some spaces to allow some better flow within the building.
Very luxurious.
It looks beautiful.
Is there any technical improvements like the lighting system, sound system, or is this mostly the look and feel?
There is going to be, I know some like electrical and some lighting. I know sound for the most part is going to pretty much stay the same, but from what I've been told, some lighting updates and definitely some electrical. It's more functionality. So HVAC, electric, water.
Air conditioning. Yay. That's great.
Yes. Air conditioning that will work properly.
Well, and I think a lot of theaters, and especially for years, going to LED lighting, which takes a lot less electricity for the amount of light. So I don't know if you're making that conversion yet, but anyway, but sounds great. And I heard from the previous interview that the seats are a little bit wider and more comfortable than the original seats.
Most definitely. They actually sit just a little bit higher too. So yeah, they are. They're great.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, what you're involved with, not only there, but you know, your background real briefly.
So I have been in the food and beverage industry for 25 plus years. So restaurant and bar business, from high-end corporate hotels to steakhouses. And I was a theater geek growing up. So anything that I could get my hands on that involved food and beverage, I pretty much took it and ran with it. So I actually started at the Opera House just about a year ago as just the bar manager. So I'm the one that gets to make all the cool, fun cocktails for all of our shows. And then the position made itself available that I was able to take over the events coordinator position. So I am basically responsible for contracting and booking and securing everything, making sure that all of our ducks are in a row for all of our upcoming events, rentals. We have some venues some wedding rentals coming up. So I get to be part of all aspects of those.
Oh, it sounds so exciting.
It's super fun.
So what do you have coming up this summer? You have some events, and maybe you can touch on a few in the fall, though. We're definitely going to have you back to talk about that. But you have a few things coming up.
So this summer, unfortunately, because we are not in our building, we were sort of kind of struggling with something to come up with. So we actually, thank you to Charles Pratt, American Legion Post 94 here in Valpo. They are letting us use their space to run some afternoon summer cabarets. So it's about an hour long cabaret. We'll actually have six of them. The two that are that will be closest will be, we have two in July and two in August. July 18th and July 20th will be with a band called Cobalt Joy, and they are going to be doing songs of summer and summer fun.
Oh, nice.
So we're really, really excited about that. It's $15 a person. All the information can be found on any of our social media pages or our website. And then in August, we will again be doing 2 days worth of summer cabarets, and those are going to be August 15th and the 22nd. And those are going to be songs of Broadway.
Oh,
so
right.
We haven't really finalized what we're doing, but it may also have some sneak peeks of what's coming in the future for the end of our season this year and then going into next year's season as well.
So what is this approximate seating capacity for the new location?
The new location, we're actually going to be down a few. We'll be down to about 325. So we're losing about 25 seats. But again, it makes it much more user-friendly and space-wise.
And the lobby is a little bit more expanded when you come in.
Yeah, they're actually opening up the lobby into the box office, as well as the upstairs. Both bars are going to be turned and moved into a different location to make that flow a little bit better. Bathrooms are being updated. The entryway, the main entryway, so where people would always sort of kind of, I would almost say like jackknife or come together and crowd right there at that entrance. That will now, all those, that whole space will be completely wide open. So all the way from the box office to that lower downstairs bar,
sure,
will all be a completely wide open space. And then upstairs as well, because of us reconfiguring where the bar is going to be sitting in the upstairs lounge, that'll actually open up for some more space as well.
Oh, excellent.
You also have an audition coming up in July.
We do. We have Young Frankenstein is coming. So the auditions are going to be July 15th and 16th with callbacks on July 17th. And again, all information on that is also on, you know, memorialoperahouse.com or any of our other socials. And some new features that we have, if for some reason you are not able to attend an in-person audition, they can actually submit a video audition. So
just
another opportunity. We actually had some people from our last show submit video audition, and we're pretty lead roles in our last show. So yeah, it actually worked out really well to our benefit.
Excellent. Well, we're almost ready to wrap up. So recap real quick, your cabaret and a few other things.
Okay. So summer cabarets, July, we have July 18th and 25th at Charles Pratt American Legion here in Valpo. Those will be songs of summer. And then we have August 15th and 22nd, and those will be most likely songs of Broadway with some feature show songs. And then we also have Young Frankenstein auditions July 15th and 16th with callbacks on the 17th.
Sounds great. It's Adrienne Bensimer, and she's the event coordinator for Memorial Opera House. And you can find out them online at memorialoperahouse.com. Thank you for coming on Art of the Year Spotlight.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. Art on the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show, whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners? Email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. Did you know that you can also listen to Art on the Air anytime as a podcast at Lakeshore Public Media's website, through Lakeshore's app, or from NPR? Plus, it's available on demand from your favorite podcast website, including TuneIn, Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, Apple Music, iHeartRadio, and many more. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode.
Hey, this is Bela Fleck, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome David Arkenstone to Art on the Air. The music track we are listening to is called Ancient Magic Awakens from the newly released Quest for the Runestone. David is a composer, musician, storyteller who brings a bit of magic to every project he does. He has almost 40 years experience and knowledge working in the film and music industries. With more than 50 albums, over 20 Billboard hits, and 5 Grammy nominations, he is one of the most prolific and established composers. A multi-instrumentalist, his compositions are unique fusions of cinematic rock, classical, and world music, which create soundscapes for the imagination. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, David. It's very nice meeting you.
Aloha to you. It's a joy to be here.
Well, David, we always let our guests, and of course, your biography's out there, so a lot of people know, but maybe it'd be more personalized if you tell us a little bit about your background. I always call it your origin story, how you got from where you were to where you are now.
You know, it probably started when I was pretty small, when I fell in love with the Nutcracker Suite. And I remember being 4 or 5, and I would play Arabian Dance over and over again. To me, it was like magic. It was like this magic thing. And it, as I got a little older, I realized that I wanted to know how to make that kind of sound. It was just so magical to me, especially that track. The whole thing is great, of course, but that track, which I still play in concert in our winter show, because it's really, you talk about origin, I can trace it back to that. And then from there, I took piano lessons from when I was about 6 to when I was about 9, even beyond that.
David, can I ask a question? At 4 years old, you were in Chicago, so did you see it at the auditorium?
Probably saw it downtown somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly where, but I remember we took the L and I thought it was just amazing. And yeah, and growing up, my brothers and I, then we moved from Chicago to Geneva, which is directly west, and pretty much grew up there. And it was just like, I don't know, back then there weren't so many houses, you know, it was just freedom and fields and forests. And we would just ride our bikes and leave for 3 hours when we were just small. And it was just, nowadays, I wouldn't even think of letting my kids do that in places. But Anyway, that section of the country has really grown up. So, but then I took piano lessons, so I had a pretty good foundation. By the time we got to California, when I was about 10 years old, we moved to Southern California. And I remember the first year we got there, we went to the beach on Christmas Day, and we just thought that was just amazing. Going in the water.
Amazing.
It was such a change, you know. But then a couple of years later, the Beatles came out, and I had to have a guitar. So I tried to get my dad to teach me because he was a guitar player. And my mom was an excellent pianist, too. But we took lessons from somebody else, so that was smart of her. But my dad played guitar, like jazz guitar, and he couldn't teach me anything. He was so advanced. I just wanted to play, you know, She Loves You. And it was just like, he was so beyond that. So, but they got me guitar lessons. I remember I took a first group lesson with about 12 other kids at a teen center. And it was like, that was the start of that. So then I learned how to play bass. And of course, I already knew how to play keyboards. And then I got in bands in junior high and high school. I was in a band and we played all the dances after football games. Mostly songs nobody knew. Just what we liked to play. Obscure Vanilla Fudge music and just wacky stuff you wouldn't normally hear you hear the hits usually at a school dance. Our biggest competition was a band that played Three Dog Night. Like, it was like the record they were so good at. But we had a lot of fun anyway. And then in college, I took a lot of music classes and tried to just shore up that foundation because I knew I just wanted to write music. I wanted to create music. I didn't want to do other people's music so much. I mean, I love the Beatles, but I still wanted to do my own Beatles stuff. But I had a band that was like a cross between Emerson, Lake and Palmer and Styx, I would say.
You know, Styx was our house band in high school.
Nice. Yeah. And because we had a lot of harmony, but we also liked to play this sort of progressive rock that was classical based because I wrote a bunch of crazy stuff. And so it ended up being like what I just said. And never got a record contract, unfortunately, because when we were doing that band was the height of sort of new wave where there was a lot of skinny tie music, I would call it, you know, in the early 80s and such. And so after that, our singer quit, another singer quit. And I was like, you know, I had two small kids and I was like, I don't know if this is the right path, you know, rehearsing four nights a week, I'm painting houses, whatever, you know, just to make a living. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to try to do my own thing for a while, see what happens. I made some music. I wrote a lot of music on the piano, and then I had an 8-track tape recorder. And so right around that time, synthesizers and computers became able to talk to each other. And so once that happened, I was like, okay, get the band. I'm going to be the band. I'm going to do all the parts, which I did. And I made cassettes and I sent them to probably 5 or 6 sort of new age labels because that was the closest thing I could find to the music I was writing, which was a little on the classical side. But anyway, I sent them out and I got response from like 3 of them who wanted to meet and talk further, which was sort of unbelievable to me because I had pounded my head against the rock and roll door for so long. We had people come out to see us and we never got this record contract and it was elusive and we never had the right management. And so it was all like fresh, like, wow, somebody wants to actually talk to me about my music. It was way cool. And I ended up going with Narada because they seemed the most interested in developing me. Like producer there, Eric Lindert, who was instrumental especially in Valley in the Clouds and further on, because I had maybe 30 songs at that time that I thought would all fit together. And he's like, he helped me sort of like, you know, pare it down. That song does not belong on this album kind of thing, you know, that the producers do and A&R people do, which was super helpful because I was just, wow, I get to make a record. You know, it was like, holy crap. You know, I've wanted to do this since I was 14 years old. So lucky for me, people liked my music when it came out and Valley in the Clouds was all over like the wave style radios. And they played in Chicago and San Francisco and LA. You know, there was a format that was more like, wasn't smooth. It was before they went smooth jazz. It was more, a little more open. And so several times I heard my music on the radio in Los Angeles, where I kind of grew up, and it flipped me out. It was just like, wow, this is something. The first time you hear it, it's like, really? Wow. I wish I could have captured that moment, you know, but, you know, we were just driving around and the kids were there and it was like, oh, listen, it was really fun. And then,
very exciting.
Yeah, it was so exciting. And then obviously the success of that record allowed me to do the next record, and it just kept going on from there. And then my fourth record, In the Wake of the Wind, got nominated for a Grammy. And so that was a whole other chapter of a step of achievement, I would say. Like, people are responding to what I'm recording. So,
especially industry people that way.
Yeah, especially that. And Narada, bless their hearts, they got way behind that record. And it was in every record store. And they made kites because we had a big map. They made kites and maps. It was just crazy what they did. So it really helped, you know, like, get the news out, because a lot of people are still like, oh, my first record of yours was Wake of the Wind. And I'm like, yeah, it was a moment. It was a career moment, I'd say.
So what do you think from like 1987 with Valley in the Clouds, how had you grown and what experience did you put into In the Wake that garnered the Grammy look? What do you think had happened?
I think, you know, because part of the reason is because I didn't have to do a day job anymore.
Wow.
I could totally focus on music day and night. You know, I'd pick the kids up and, you know, we'd have dinner, but then I'd still be working at night after they went to sleep. So I think the more I did that, the better I got at it. And the more I knew what I wanted, and the better I got at making a composition that I felt would live within the framework of whatever album I was trying to do. Like, I had Citizen of Time, and that was a certain kind of, I was a little more open than In the Wake of the Wind, but by In the Wake of the Wind came, by the time that came, we used a bunch of other people, like more musicians on that. We had string section, we had a clarinet, we had oboe, we had two, three percussionists sometimes. So I think the more successful I got, the more I knew exactly what I wanted to say, and I knew how to orchestrate it better. And I'm still finding that out. I'm still working that out. I'm grateful every day that I get to wake up and explore music.
And a lot of your work is what we call concept albums. And I don't know if all of our audience understands that. And of course, we're going to be talking about your upcoming album being truly a concept album. But tell us how you work around that. What it generates that concept?
Well, like In the Wake of the Wind, I knew I wanted to do something that was, you know, at the first it was going to be like this pirate thing, this pirate voyage thing. And then they were like, I don't know, pirates, there's a, you know, the record company was like, I don't know, that's kind of a negative connotation. Of course, that was way before Pirates of the Caribbean became mega famous, so it probably would have been okay. But it turned into more of a seafaring thing. And then for me, it turned more into a seafaring adventure, which means there's an island and there's people and you meet all these people. And then we started working on a story. And as soon as I had the story, it was like a script, just like my current record. And all I had to do was say, oh, well, this would be good for music. You know, let's put music here in this part of the story. And so that all was kind of easy. And we had, like I said, a map and everything. The guy brought it into the studio. I found some old footage a couple years ago of that recording time, and I put it on YouTube. It's like the making of Wake of the Wind or something. People can maybe find it. And there's a moment when the artist brings the black and white map and just lays it on the studio floor, where I was just sitting around going, wow, oh yes, that, you know, it became so real. I felt like I was scoring a movie. And I like that more than, I mean, I fluctuate. Sometimes I like making an album that has certain songs, like Winterlude, my last album. It was just my vision of winter and what it means to me, sort of.
Kind of almost like a musical palate cleanser between an epic, and then you just need to, you don't want to stop doing it and take a break, but you do something completely different.
Exactly. And I always know I'm going to get back to it, you know, and Quest for the Runestone is really back. but then I did Quest for the Dream Warrior. I did Return of the Guardians, which were both part of the Wake of the Wind universe. So I was very comfortable there. And then, but then I did, you know, and then I moved to Windham Hill and did some albums and got another Grammy nomination.
That was Atlantis, right? Or
yeah,
when did
Atlantis, yeah. Atlantis and Citizen of the World. So, you know, it was interesting to get nominated on two different labels, because then I thought, okay, this is really about the music. You know, it's not about the label. So that was pretty cool, I have to say. It's very validating for your peers to say, you know, you're one of the top five.
Right.
This year.
So tell us about collaboration. And of course, your more recent album before this one was Pangea with Wouter Kellerman, who we have had on our show. But tell us about that type of, and we did before we were on the air, that was partially during COVID that you collaborated.
Absolutely, which was a little strange. But no matter where he would have been, he wouldn't have been where I was. I live in the middle of California on the coast, and it's not a big musical mecca there, which I love. Because I can easily go to LA or San Francisco and get that fix or do my recording if I'm recording other people. But with Wouter, he emailed me out of the blue, and I knew who he was. And I had a bunch of songs that had space for a soloist. I had like five or six songs going into that project that were, I wanted to do an album about Pangea, which was another concept album I've been kicking around. So I had the name and I had a bunch of music that had a space for either a vocalist or a flutist or a violinist. So right away we had five songs, you know, like within 2 weeks he played on them and it was like, oh yeah, this is, you know, and then he came up with a bunch of songs and I played on them. He had some friends of his from around the world play on them. And he recorded from Australia. And then we put it together and sent it all to, I think I did most of the sort of what I call pre-mixing. And then we sent it to the mixer who's in Northern California, who he recommended. And so, you know, nobody was in the same room, but it came out great. It was a beautiful record.
Yeah, it was, and Grammy nominated. And I'm sorry it didn't take the Grammy.
You know, it's all right. the thing is, for collaboration, like I've tried to collaborate several times, and most of the time I end up contributing 80% because I'm just a writaholic, and it's just, I have the most stuff that seems like it would fit the project, and everybody doesn't come up with that all the time. So with Wouter, he was a total equal, which was really nice.
I don't know if you had a chance to see his version of Bohemian Rhapsody, especially the video. Yeah. If you get a chance, you need to see that. He plays multiple parts, you know, and actually is physically in there. And it's a really interesting take on it. I know that it's a different take on Queen, where he's playing the different flutes and you see all four Wooters in the video. So,
yeah, well, we actually did some videos. And one of the ones, he's in three or four panes, you know, doing that same kind of thing on our piece, because there's like a bunch of flute parts. Of course, he's like me, just keep adding and adding until you run out of tracks. And then we have to go, okay, that's probably enough, you know, and that's another thing that I've learned, Esther, that you were bringing up earlier. Another thing I've learned is to when to say, okay, that's enough, because these days we can have 60 tracks or more. And it's like, is it really adding to the song? You know, is the piece, is it necessary? You know, really?
It's already epic. Even before you add all the rest.
I've gotten better at that, at saying, okay, that's enough. I think it's here. I think it's all here. Just needs to be mixed.
So it's true of, I think, all artists. We've talked about that with our artists. But at what point is the painting, the thing, or photography, whatever it is, done? So, of course, I used to have an expression in theater, because theater, you're on a timeline and it has to be done. And we said done is good, because it's audience invisible. Whatever's done, it's got to be on stage.
That's right.
We want to move on to your new album, and it's Quest for the Runestone. Tell us a little bit about the background of that. And we'll also allude in the first song. The one comment I want to say is that Dash wrote actually like a story. So I guess my first question is, did the story come first or did the music come first?
You know, I wanted to do another concept album because I haven't done one for a while, since Pangea, I would say. You know, I had some other albums, Turning of the Year and Solitude, which were more like me and a string quartet, which I love that intimacy, that simplicity. And Solitude was really popular, and so I did Winterlude because it just seemed like a natural progression. And that was another minimal, it was just me and a cellist, that one. So I felt like, okay, I'm ready for something epic. now. And I was listening to the, or reading something on the BBC, and it had to do with runestones, which I didn't really, even being having a Scandinavian background, I didn't really know that much about them. I think I'd heard of them maybe. But then I started looking at them and I thought, oh man, this is tailor-made for one of my records, I think. So I came up with the title. And then I just picked around at some kind of, like the first song, Prophecy, let's say. I sort of played around with that song as a way in to whatever story there was going to be. And I had no idea. But then I asked Dash if he would write a story. And he was like, yeah, sure. And he delivered just incredible, really cool story. Just what I had no idea what it was going to be about. I just gave him the title, you know. And he's, he graduated from Berkeley as an English major. So I thought he could do something. He's a very creative person. So I thought he'd be able to come up with something. And I thought, you know, if I could fill 30 pages in a booklet, that'd be great. So now book it blew up to like 48 pages.
I know.
But I wouldn't take a thing out. And I did no editing. He just delivered a really, really nice story that was easy.
Inspiring to you.
Right.
Inspiring to me and easy for me to illustrate using music. You know, I'd read it. Rhiann just seemed like this great character. So she got her own song. And, you know, a lot of the other parts, it was just what I needed to kind of go down the highway to illustrate the story. It was just one thing to the next. You know, it could have been a double album because I skipped a lot of moments that I could have made into songs. But I did a double album for Middle Earth a couple years ago, and that was great. But I didn't want to do that again. I wanted to try to keep it at about an hour.
Sure, and it is.
There was a long gap between those two albums, though, right? The Middle Earth ones?
There's three albums in between. Middle Earth and this one, yeah.
Well, maybe we should listen to Rhiann.
Yeah, so here it is from the Quest for the Runestone, David Arkinson, Rhiann. Thank you. was Rianne from the new album, Quest for the Runestone, coming out in July here, David Arkenstone. You're listening to Art on the Air with our guest today, David Arkenstone, on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. I have to tell you, when I first listened, I didn't have the booklet when I first listened to the music. And I said to my wife, while we were listening together, actually, I said, this should be a movie. I mean, I didn't know anything other than the names of the songs. I said, this should be a movie. I mean, I can visualize the whole something happening. You could different, and I don't know what it was. So it really, the music really does carry you there.
That's an awesome comment, because that means a lot to me, because it's hard to do that with music sometimes, you know, to take, but a lot of my musical journeys and people have resonated with them. They go there. They go on these adventures with me. And it's not always the same adventure as I had planned, but they go somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's a great feeling. And that song features Eric Rigler on the pipes, of course. And
right.
Man, is that a
fabulous,
poignant sound? I mean, it's just like, wow, you can just be in Scotland and you can just hear that, or Ireland, you know. And he's just a master at it.
I mean, it's very quiet, reflective, and then very moody at times. And then you go that into the violin, back to the pipes. Yeah, I love the structure of it.
Yeah, it's, well, because you can't have pipes all the time.
No. I mean,
it's a lot of pipes because it's a certain kind of sound, you know, and it's I wouldn't call it an invasion. I would call it like it just encompasses everything. You know, when you hear these pipes, it's like that's all you can hear. You know, really, and he just did a great job with the melody, and it's just he played on three or four tracks on the album, so can't say enough about Eric.
So, David, how do you wind up in Gamerland with World of Warcraft?
I think that started because
it's a good fit.
It is a good fit, and I've been lucky to be able to do it for like almost 20 years. I think it started with a gentleman who programmed my music at Epcot. And somehow I found out, actually, he programmed a track of from In the Wake of the Wind called Papillon at Epcot. And somehow, I mean, I would just keep hearing from people, oh, I heard your music in Epcot. I was like, wow, that's cool. I wonder who did that. You know, how did I get more? Anyway, by the time I found him, he had moved on to being a music director at a game company. And I went and met with him a couple of times, and we were sort of kindred spirits, but that nothing ever worked out with that company. But then he moved over to Blizzard, who makes World of Warcraft, which is mega popular, and asked me to do a couple small pieces, which I did, you know, just like, you don't even have to pay me. I'm just going to do these, you know. Just,
wow.
So awesome. And it's turned into more and more with them. And I just finished a bunch of pieces with them just now for an expansion that's coming out, I think, at the end of August. So my music fits part of their game, and the game is just enormous. It's got every kind of music you can imagine. And so I think the composers are a little there's like seven of us, I think, and we all do what we do best for them. And they've been able to suss that out. And I feel just great when I get an email from them. Oh, we need blah-de-blah. It's like, yeah, I'm available.
So what about NBC Sports? Is that an ongoing collaboration as well?
That came originally from a guy who heard my second album, Island, and there's a song on there called Desert Ride. Mm-hmm. And he put that in a whole bunch of things. And then he finally got in touch with me, and we decided to do an Olympic record for, I think it was 92. So my friend Kosti and I basically got that together, Narada album. And David was played a bunch of that music at the Olympics, and then he was a fan, and then the Kentucky Derby came up, and he wanted to know if I wanted to write a theme for that. Like, I would ever say no to these people. Yeah, I'm just too busy, you know, wow. So that was just, that opened up NBC Sports, because once I did that, which they still use, which blows my mind, because that was 98, I think I did that, and they still use that theme in there, and it's so great to hear it. You know, and I always get comments around that time. Oh, Kentucky Derby's coming up. And then it turned into gymnastics they needed, and then figure skating, and then Premier Soccer, which has been on all the time since like 2011. And so every once in a while they call me. I mean, I don't usually say, hey, you got anything for me? You know, they know what I can do and when I might be right for something, I think. They have a vast music department, so I wait for the call.
That's good. So any background on Oceans of Ice in regards to the story?
You know, it's a little bit reminiscent of some of the moods of Winterlude, a little bit, because it's got some synthy elements, but it doesn't. Has cello in it and some violin, I think. And there is a part in the story where he talks about oceans of ice, and I just thought it was just an eloquent way to say something. And it was easy to get into that mood for me.
Well, let's take a listen on this journey. Quest for the Runestone, David Arkenstone, Oceans of Ice. That was Oceans of Ice from the new album, Quest for the Runestone, David Arkenstone. And that's going to be available in July. So if you're hearing this, you can find it. And I have to say, the album packaging is marvelous. I mean, fortunately, I got it in advance. I mean, it's just beautiful. You got to put that in for a Grammy, an album package. I mean, it's just absolutely wonderful. But it contains so much in it besides the booklet, and you actually get a runestone and everything. It's just wonderful.
Yeah, I kind of went overboard with that. What started it was, you know, CDs are falling off, right? Like, people are just streaming now. And the idea of the quest for the Runestone and why I didn't release any singles ahead of time is because I wanted it to be a whole listening experience, you know, almost like an LP, where you put it on, you sort of have to engage with it in a way. You know, you can't just play the third track down, even though I did when I was looking for Arabian Dance when I was young. But you can't, you have to sort of engage with it a little more. And so I wanted that the CD to be a little bit like that, where it was more of a listening experience all the way through, beginning to end. And it made sense, and it took you somewhere, and you were like, wow, at the end. So kind of turned out like that. And then I thought, well, if I'm going to do that and make a special CD, and make a CD even, I want it to be special. So it started with, then we're talking about the booklet. And then I thought, okay, well, if you have a booklet and a CD, that doesn't fit. I mean, you could shrink wrap both of them, and that would be your thing. But I thought, I have this album at home that's like the six symphonies of Sibelius on a Deutsche Grammophon. And he had a little box in it. And he had a little booklet. And I thought, wow. I mean, we're talking about some cost here, you know, to make what they call a hamburger box. I don't know why they call it that. But I thought, well, that's for me. But then it's like, but the box is bigger than just the story and the CD. So I want to put some more stuff in there that made sense with the story. So I finally...
Well, it does, because there was that box in the store. You know, there's a box referenced in the story. So, yeah, it really ties in.
Yeah. And then I said, okay, how about a little stone? Okay, how about a little necklace? That's like some of the birds in the story. And then, you know, a magnet got in there somehow. And I don't know. I did go overboard, but I thought it's going to be special. You know, it's kind of a limited edition. So, you know, why not? Why not go for it?
A question. You had a ready-made name with Oceans of Ice in the story. But how is that naming process for you? Because I know for me personally, it's really difficult unless it's right there. I mean, like sometimes it's right there. But the naming, how is that for you? Because you've had a lot of albums and a lot of songs.
You know, somebody told me at a show that I had 800 songs, something like that. But, you know, I have to align it to the project. And this one was a little easier because it had elements in the story. Like, there's a song called The Arbos Stirs, which nobody would know about unless they read the story, which I kind of liked because what the heck is that? You know, turns out to be, you know, what it is in the story. But Prophecy I had. I wanted there to be a prophecy, so I had that title. But then after that, you know, there is the Ancient Magic Awakens comes up, and that's in the story. So a lot of this came from the story, and it wasn't that hard. A lot of times I struggle with that naming issue, you know, especially when I did Winterlude, because there's so many ways to say the same thing, sort of.
I know, you just want to say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah. I've never done that on a record yet. Could happen.
Yeah, the naming thing, even for artists, visual artists, is sometimes you have an idea, but then what do you call this thing? You're listening to Art on the Air with our guest today, David Arkenstone, on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. You know, we're almost have to wrap up here, David, so we're going to give you a chance, and we're going to play out with The Secrets of the Runestone. So tell us a little bit about that, but also tell us a little bit about what you have coming up, and, of course, the release of your albums coming up in July, Quest for the Runestone.
Yeah, well, that song was kind of like the second-to-last song. So when I do that in a concept album, it sort of has some kind of resolution, I would say, before you get to the place where it's like, okay, we made it, you know. We're on the journey home, or we're done, or whatever. Everything's cool. We vanquished whatever there was to vanquish, all that stuff. So this was part of the explorational journey, I think, of Rhiann, where she discovers how she's going to be able to write everything. R-I-G-H-T. That was a big moment for me. And that song just took off and became huge. Had everybody that was on the album was on that song.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It's a beautiful piece. You have vocals, pipes, drums, and it goes faster and louder. There's a lot of dynamics going on there. Real quickly, because we're going to wrap up here in a moment, and then we're going to play out with Secrets of the Runestone. Any future projects on the horizon?
You know, this one blasted me, but I have some ideas for a couple other projects. But I haven't started them. I haven't even thought of them. We're going on Beyond Tour this winter in Colorado and New Mexico and Arizona. So I'm looking forward to that.
With Quest specifically?
You know, there's not that much I can play from that album, but I'm pretty sure we can play Oceans of Ice and that'll fit the concept. You know, it's probably something else I might be able to play, but I just like playing the tunes I've played for, you know, we've been touring like for 10 years with this kind of show. And there's my take on a lot of holiday songs and then some other older winter songs. We play a couple songs from Winterlude and then this song called Ice Palace that I did was when I was on Windham Hill. So I'm just looking to that right now. And this release is taking a lot. I mean, it's snowballing, let's put it that way. By the time this airs, it'll be like, wow.
I know. It's a very exciting album, and we're glad you shared it with us. That's Quest for the Runestone, David Arkenstone. You can hear it in July. It's going to be released. It's a wonderful album, and if you get the CD, you get a wonderful package, which is kind of rare in this age of downloaded music and everything like that. And we're going to finish with Secrets of the Runestone as we play out here. David, thank you so much for coming on Art of the Year and sharing your arts journey and your music journey.
Thank you guys for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it has been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks.
we'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.